I'm at Angel Fire. I'm Jerry Pippin, and this is the 2010 Paranormal Symposium. And one of the great things about doing these remote broadcasts is you meet some very interesting people. And this man I'm about to introduce, I've actually met him before. I just didn't know it. He probably didn't introduce me, but he was at an audience there when we did something from Roswell one year. Clifford Mahudi, how are you?
Very fine.
And you go to a lot of these things, I take it.
I go to a lot of different conventions, the Roswell, the UFO Congress in Laughlin, and like, for example, this is my first time here at Angel Fire. I've been trying to come to this for many years, but I do get involved with a lot of these meetings locally and nationwide.
Well, tell the audience why.
The reason that I go to these conventions and these meetings is because I, as a Zuni Indian, we have a lot of background history about the star people. We have a lot of star knowledge. Our whole systems are based upon the beginnings when we were given protocols on a lot of different systems that we have. And my involvement with this type of meetings is to learn about where the rest of the world is at on a time schedule of what the Indians, American Indian community knows about especially about the past and the future. And so my background as an engineer and as a member of a medicine order in Zuni gives me an opportunity to compare notes, if you may, on what the rest of the world is doing in terms of finding out what is happening throughout the whole universe, primarily on this planet.
Now, how are we doing, the rest of the world?
My experience so far is that within the last 30 years, that we as Indian people are now realizing that the rest of the world is at an awakening stage within the last 30 years.
So let's expand on this a little bit for our listeners. It's no secret that Native Americans seem to have an insight into paranormal activity that none of the rest of us had. And you're talking about UFOs as well, right?
That is true. We have, strictly speaking about the Zuni culture and Zuni community, we're isolated close to the Four Corners area. And we've had UFO activities as far as our ancestors or our grandfathers tell us since the beginning of time. That beginning of time, we do not really know. But within my lifetime, I've had experiences since I was 10 years old, which I'm 66 right now, so it's been about 55 years since I've had experiences with it. And because we were an isolated tribe away from the rest of the world, the teachings that were given me when I was a young man and when I was growing up was in a way isolated. But however, after so many years of that and then get exposed to the other world, which is the outside the reservation, I've learned quite a lot since I was 10 years old.
Now you decided to document this in a book or something? I mean, you seem to have a lot of things that people need to know.
Well, I have been asked, and I have been sort of guided to that within the last 5 years, because my involvement with the UFO community is a comparative analysis of what we as Indian people know and what the rest of the world is doing in terms of documentation, experiences, encounters, and those type of activities. Now, I have, recently means 3 years ago, I retired from a full-time job as an engineer, and I'm back full-time at my reservation. So I think that I am have enough notes and enough background information to perhaps start writing about these things.
Well, I hope you do, because I just have a hunch there's a lot of information there. Tell me, are the Zunis, I hear this about Native American tribes, and don't know about this tribe, are they star people?
The Zuni system, the tribe itself, has a lot of connection with the star people. And if you look at the mythology, which is a history of our tribe,
uh-huh.
and several southwestern Pueblo tribes, since they don't have a written history, but it's through mythology, through religious system, through spirituality, we are directly connected with the star people and the star protocols provided by them somewhere way back in time.
And what would those protocols be?
Well, first of all, there's two basic things. First of all is we're the caretakers of the earth. That is our direct charge. The second thing is that we have been, in our history and our mythology, we have been given protocols in how to live the lives and to also be a group to demonstrate how we're supposed to take care of the earth and also how to take care of mankind throughout the whole planet Earth.
Well, from just my viewpoint, it doesn't look like we're doing too good of a job.
Well, I think that what happened was that it's just like anything else. There's a lot of influences that occurred in the history which deviated from the original mission that we were given.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because that in any system, it's not a perfect system. However, the only thing perfect about our instructions were those people that gave us the orders in how to maintain our lives on this planet. However, we have deviated from that for many, many reasons.
And when you talk to this and your friends there on the reservation, acquaintances and family and everything, is this a pretty prevalent notion that you have, or do they share it?
The American Indian tribes are very hush-hush about their backgrounds, their history.
We know that. We tried to find out a lot of things.
Well,
I don't get a lot of information, but I try.
Well, I believe,
I think that's part of the thing down in Dulce, even. It's mixed in with sacred legends, and nobody wants to talk about it.
Well, it's commonly known as taboos.
Uh-huh.
And there are a lot of taboos with each individual tribes. And as a whole, there are so many taboos because some of these things it's common knowledge. It's been with us for centuries. And the other thing, too, is that when our country was invaded way back 500 years ago, there was a lot of openness with the invaders. However,
basically, if anybody reads history, the American Indian was double-crossed, really.
Well, absolutely. I think this is what has happened. The other thing, too, is that there's a lot of what is commonly known as esoteric knowledge that are kept within the orders of so many different groups with individual tribes.
Mm-hmm.
There's a commonality among the Pueblos in the orders of medicine orders, the priesthood societies, the Kachina societies, and there's a commonality, but however, there's a distinction because of languages, of location, and also of the time frames that each one of them have. Each Pueblo has their origin, like the Hopis and the Zunis came from the Grand Canyon, from the emergence. I believe that the other Pueblos, their emergence places are like in Colorado. Up here, we're sitting here in Taos, New Mexico, with the Taos Indians within their own within their boundaries of where the emergence is. But a lot of this information is sort of kept secret. And because of the sacred and because of the religious and the spirituality that's involved.
Yeah, that's the reason I was getting at it when I asked you about your friends and family and other people back on the reservation. how they feel about you out here publicly talking about things. Are you revealing secrets, or
no?
You think it's time to reveal secrets?
There are because of my status within the orders that I belong to in Zuni, I am not allowed to do that. However, the common knowledge that I am conveying to the rest of the world is an interpretation. The interpretation is one of the hardest things to do because we in the United States of America, our language is English. You look at the American Indian tribes, each one of them has their languages. Even within their own tribes, the dialects are different for the same tribal's language.
That's interesting. I don't mean to interrupt you, but that's a commonality among a lot of races around the world, the dialects. I wonder how that ever got started. You know, why we're not all speaking the same language.
Well, when I asked that question among my elders when I was having my teachings, was that different groups, for example, my Zuni tribe is a composite of many different peoples from different parts of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say universe, the universe would mean that where did our teachings come from? Maybe we were here on Earth, but our teachings came from different parts of the universe, different star systems, different planets, different parts of the universe where there was a lot of distinct knowledge, distinct practices, distinct protocols that were given these people by the star people. And we have direct connection with the star people. And the thing that is really hard to impress upon anybody is the interpretation.
Have you personally had an encounter with...
I have had not direct encounters, uh-huh. but I have seen UFOs since I was a young kid. One of the very interesting things that I have with the gentleman that's here at this conference is Travis Walton. Travis Walton's experience happened on November 5th of 1975. My experience happened 1 month later on December 5th of 1975 when I had an encounter with a UFO.
And was it, what location was that?
This was right outside of Zuni, New Mexico, where my village is.
So that's not that far away from where Travis was?
No. And it's within the time frame, and with this, it's like about no more than 100 miles from my reservation or the location of this encounter to where Travis was at on the Mogollon Rim.
What happened with you the December 5th?
1975.
Yeah, what happened?
Well, we had we were coming in about 2 o'clock in the morning, coming in from Arizona in almost a new car, and I have seen UFOs come out in that part of the country. And on the south side, we're coming in from a west to east direction toward the village, about 2 miles outside the village. We saw this, there's three of us, my brother and his friend, and it was her car that we were driving. It's almost a brand new, it was a Ranchero, a Ford Ranchero type vehicle. And it only had maybe about 2,000 or 3,000 miles on it, so it was brand new almost. Well, I saw this thing coming over on the southern horizon. It was like a bright red light, between red and orange light, and I didn't want to say anything, but as it kept coming closer, I said, "Look over on the south side." I said, "There is something coming. I don't want to tell you, but look at it." So we came, and then about a mile, maybe a mile and a half from the village. We're getting close to the village. And in particular, there's the village's sewer ponds are on the west side, and the sewer ponds would be about a half a mile off the road on the south side between the highway where we were at. At that time, this UFO was orange in color, and between the orange and the yellow, and it's sort of like parked right there. And before that happened, we were driving this car down, and the lights started going dim. And about a mile, no more than a mile, the car completely just...
It died.
Died. Mm-hmm. No engine. The engine died. There was no more lights. And just stopped. It was about, I'd say it was about maybe 10, 20 degrees at night, December 5th, in the winter time. But we could see this thing sitting over there half a mile, and it was so funny to say, why would it land on above the sewer ponds? Well, when we were looking at it, and a beam came down from underneath the vehicle, I mean the UFO, and it shot down my proximity of that location was the sewer ponds, and it looked like about a green, yellowish light beam that shot down out of the UFOs. It was bright. So we got out of the car. We ran down. We started running down to the village, and it was cold. And of course, but there was no cars. Two o'clock in the morning, between 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning. There's nobody on that road.
Right.
So we kept saying, let's keep running. And about that time, something snapped inside of me. He said, well, we can't run forever. It's too cold, for one thing. Anyway, when we ran, it's going to take a while for us to get to the village. So let's hide underneath this culvert. We walked, we crawled into a culvert, which is about 3 feet in diameter, 3 to 4 feet in diameter. We sat in there for about 30 minutes, and of course we were getting cold. And I said, well, let's get out of here, and let's see if we can get a rest, and we'll just start running. Well, we got out after about 30 minutes, and we got on the highway. And on the where our car was parked, there was a car that was coming. It had lights on it. So he said, I told my brother and his girlfriend, they said, whatever you do, let's just get in the middle of the highway and start waving our hands. They got to stop. And this car took forever to come. I think it was maybe going about maybe 5 miles per hour.
Oh, really?
And so it finally stopped. And because we were scared, we were cold, we automatically jumped into the car. And this is an Indian reservation. We all know each other. I mean, who's going to question you? We jumped in there. And what was odd about it is that we were just jabbering away. Did you see that thing up there? It's still sitting there. It was still sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
And when we looked in there, the light was so, the dashboard, what may be like a dashboard, was not a conventional vehicle dashboard. It was sort of like a round thing, and there was a lights around it, but the instruments were not like any other thing. But what was really funny was that this vehicle, if the old days, there used to be straps on the back. I guess those were for hand straps in the old vehicles, and they were hanging loose. And I said, this is an odd-looking car. But the driver was there. I thought I knew him. I talked to him. He didn't answer back. And there was a guy in the back. He was sitting in there, and he was holding on to Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Andy dolls. And he was just looking at us, and they were not talking. Well, they drove into the village, and they did not stop at any stop sign. Now, we're going 5 miles an hour maximum speed.
Were they stoned?
We don't know, because I could see them with this light in there, but it was like it was a strange vehicle.
They never really said much to you.
No, they didn't say anything.
Nothing.
And I could not hear the engine, but I do know about old timer engines, the cars, especially like Buicks.
They're noisy.
Huh?
They're noisy.
They were very quiet in those days.
Oh, were they?
You know, the 8-cylinder and the 12-cylinder engines were very, very.
I didn't realize.
Yes, I remember those cars. So we jumped out of it. It just happened that it drove by my parents' house, and we said, "Let's get out of here." We jumped out, and those cars kept moving. It didn't stop.
You jumped out while he was going 5 miles an hour.
Right. So we jumped out. We ran into the house. We told my brother was over there, my parents, and of course. They thought we were drunk.
Yeah, you're right.
But the strange part of it is that we were excited. We talked to my brother was in bed already. He said, "What are you guys talking about?" I said, "Come on out here." But in the meantime, the UFO came and it followed us.
Okay.
I didn't realize it while we were in the car.
Uh-huh.
Well, it stopped above our house. And I would say it was no more than 100 feet in the air. Maybe 100, maybe 200 feet. That's the first time I saw. I used to carry a set of Navy nighttime binoculars,
mm-hmm.
very powerful binoculars. I took them out and I looked up there and I could see three of them walking around. It's good in like a dome structure.
And there are people inside walking.
They were
something.
Not people. They were like real short guys.
Okay.
They were only maybe about 3 or 4 feet high.
Traditional grays, probably.
Could have been, but
yeah.
You know, I could not tell because
yeah.
of the just light
the
in
distance,
there.
Right.
It was, but they were in there. There was about
yeah.
maybe about three of them.
Wow.
And then after that, I mean, we just got cold and we just got scared and we took off. And we went back in there, and I'm sure it stayed there, and it probably took off. But we didn't want to deal with it anymore.
Well, I can understand that.
So that's my...
This sounds like something out of a horror movie. I love it.
You know, when, the reason I never told anybody...
These two, they never said anything.
No.
Nothing at all.
And that was so strange about it.
And when you went back to get the car, it started?
Yes. One funny thing about it is I left a pair of gloves in there. And, of course, in those days, the reason we were in Arizona was to go because they closed the bars at 2 o'clock. So we went to get some liquor.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So when we came back, the liquor was gone and my gloves were gone. But we went back the next day and we jumped in the vehicle, started the engine. It just started right away like nothing happened.
Wow.
So this was.
So the ETs were thirsty.
Probably.
<Yeah. laughs> We could go on for hours.
Yeah.
You got anything that you'd like to close with? I mean, that we've left out or you'd like to bring out for our audience?
Well, so one of the things that, going back to the Native American knowledge is that there's a lot of things that are happening on reservations. It always has been, but it's more becoming more prevalent right now. We talk about Dulce. We talk about a lot of different, for example, on the Navajo Reservation, the Skinwalker Ranch.
And then, yeah, there's been a lot of reports that could never verify up near Flagstaff or back this way on the Navajo Reservation. A lot of things happening.
Is that the around Diocon and
yeah, up
yeah,
through
that,
there.
That's back in about.
I never could get anybody to talk to me about it.
Well, there's some people that know about it.
Okay.
I think right now I know about it, but I think that there
we had somebody that lived in that area that did some producing for me,
mm-hmm.
and they drive for several days to get some information. Really couldn't.
Well, they
didn't exactly there. They lived in Sedona, but
yeah.
But that was a rumor I was trying to track down.
Well, it's for real. The other thing, too, is that there's a lot of taboos. It's been with us since the beginning of time, so we have to maintain that, the taboos, because, again, it's sometimes they feel they the Indian think it's maybe it's personal, so they don't talk about it. And if they talk about it, then you get ostracized. They say, well, you're crazy. You're not, what have you been drinking? That type
of
ridicule.
They don't know themselves that you're
yes.
probably telling the truth.
Right, so.
Well, Clifford, it's really been an interesting experience, and I love that story. I won't forget that right away.
Well, it's...
Next time I see a car going 5 miles an hour in the middle of the desert, and I got a guy in the back seat and a guy in the front seat, yeah, that's what it sounds like. A little tippy time. Anyway, Clifford Mahudi. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
I'm Jerry Pippin. We're here at Angel Fire. I'd like to take an opportunity here to talk to you about our websites. We've been adding programs and adding programs, and sometimes it's difficult to find what you're looking for. First of all, we have a search mechanism on each of our websites. And you can click, like if it's jerrypippin.com or if iPodShows.net, just search the websites, put in the name of what you're looking for, and it will come up. Check us out, won't you? Often.